Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 54th Hewlett-Packard's Lab podcast from Research to Reality. I was really looking forward to this one. We have a great honor and pleasure to host Michelle Murray, Executive Assistant at Hewlett-Packard Labs. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Michelle, you just had fifth anniversary of your employment here, but you are not that new to this company. Tell us about this paradox.
So yeah, you're talking a little bit about my claim to fame in labs. So before I joined HPE, I worked for a company called the SETI Institute. And that was founded in 1984 by when my aunt introduced her then boyfriend, eventual husband, to her boss, Barney Oliver. Mm-hmm. And Tom Pearson, my uncle, and Barney founded the SETI Institute to support the NASA SETI program. And Barney Oliver, as everyone should know, is the first director of Hewlett-Packard Labs. And so through Barney, when I joined the SETI Institute, Barney was still working as the deputy director of the NASA SETI program, which is where he went after he retired from HP. And I spent several years working with the NASA SETI program and Barney. And when the program was canceled, he left NASA, came to join the Institute, and called up some friends to help support the SETI program that we were able to continue. And he called up Bill and Dave, so along with some other notable people in tech, and they donated some money to help continue the SETI program. So Bill and Dave came through for a donor appreciation a couple of times. And because of Barney's influence, and he had a very large influence on the SETI Institute, much like he has here in labs and in HP's history, he had had lots of various executives came through the SETI as members of our board. Former CEO Lou Platt was one of our board members. Joel Birnbaum, another director of labs, was on our board. So I got to work with a lot of executives who were with HP up to, say, around the year 2000. And there was a lot of influence from HP on SETI. Our early procedures and manuals were based off of HP. So when I joined labs 5 years ago, it was a very familiar feeling and a very familiar place. Even though I've never actually worked for HP or HPE, I had a lot of influence over my years at SETI with HP.
So similar culture.
Very similar culture. Very similar culture.
I am glad you spoke about influence. And if I think about you and what you do for us, I interact with you on a daily basis on some really critical topics for success. And I can't overestimate the influence you're making on our daily job, our tactical, operational, strategic, etc. I'm not sure that everyone understands that amount of influence. So can you tell us, what are all your roles? What do you do? How do you influence all of us?
Well, I always see the role of an executive assistant as something who helps other people get their jobs accomplished and reach their goals. So I always try to make sure I'm aligned with the priorities of my team, of my managers, and what projects I can take from the off their plate to mm-hmm. lighten up their load so that they can reach their objectives. Some of the basic administrative things of calendar management, meeting planning, but I also get to do a lot of different activities kind of to support the overall goals of the organization, which I find really fascinating.
And in any work, there are parts that we all like a little bit more. What are these parts for you?
I do like kind of the event planning that I've had to do, mm-hmm. Whether it's a team building event or kind of supporting the Labs Discover presence. That's kind of a long project, and I like working logistically on figuring out, okay, how we're going to do this and how we're going to do that. So those are kind of projects I really enjoy getting my teeth into. It gets very different results, and so I do enjoy that kind of thing.
And then there are certain aspects that are really challenging. What are these?
Well, I like to joke it's time zones, scheduling meeting across a global company, that's not always the easiest thing to do. But really, the biggest challenges come just in managing multiple priorities. Sometimes there are multiple conflicting priorities that are going on. I support three different teams, so that there are sometimes different things going on with the different teams. Recent example is a lot of Discover deadlines were coming up about the same time all of our interns were getting onboarded. So there was a lot of activity going on there, and I just had to figure out how to best manage my time to make sure that all of my tasks and goals were accomplished.
And I wasn't much helpful with the number of interns to you.
Only 10, not that bad.
Michelle, there's probably 20, 30 of us versus one of you. You can't do everything. How can we help you so that you can more effectively help us?
Really, it's just making sure I'm aware of your priorities and what is going on. The more information I have, the better I can prioritize my role, so that I know if there's something conflicting, if there's a deadline coming up, what is going on that I can help manage my projects as well as yours.
So share as much as it makes sense.
Exactly.
Not more than that.
Exactly. More information is always better.
Yeah. So I've noticed since I came here, that's why I've been here for almost 25 years, that there's a great teamwork. But teamwork among executive assistants goes above and beyond of all of us. Can you tell us, how have you accomplished this? I mean, when you are on vacation, we work effectively with Jennifer, with Ingrid, and vice versa. So how have you accomplished building that amazing team?
Well, I think the key to being an executive assistant is being able to communicate across teams, across organizations, so that when you're working with somebody, you know who to go to, you can get the information you need. Within labs, Jennifer, Ingrid, and I do a lot to support each other. So if I'm out, we can cover for each other, which is very helpful. And then other EAs throughout the company have information that I might need for some other purpose with a tool that I'm not familiar with. So it's a very nice way to communicate, make sure that everybody knows what's going on.
And EA stands for executive assistant.
Yes, executive assistant.
One of the basics, one of the one-on-ones in management is not just managing people, but also managing peers, and even more so managing upward, your managers, and perhaps even their managers. But you are on the front line of this management 360. You are working with interns, with entry-level engineers, with more senior, with distinguished technologists, fellows, even senior fellows, GMs, etc. How are you interacting with all of them? Do you have mental switch, how to talk to one or the other, or in your case, it's very similar?
It's very similar, because I believe, no matter what the person's role is, you treat them the same way, the same respect, mm-hmm. regardless if they're an intern or the CEO. So if you do that, you're going to get broad buy-in. With more junior, newer employees, there may be a little bit more hand-holding, some mentoring on business processes, making sure they understand how to get things accomplished within the company structure. And for more senior people, it's more of a peer-to-peer kind of thing. What are you doing, what I'm doing, how do our projects and tasks align?
So more detailed for the entry level and more abstract and
the more entry level newer people, they just need a little bit more familiarity and training with the business processes that I try to keep on top of for all of my teams.
I usually ask during these podcasts my interviewees about their perspective of professional organizations, and probably of all people, more so than the management, who joins which professional society, because you approve all these expenses and most of them go through you anyways. So what is your take? How is that working for us?
I think it's a great thing. Regardless of what role you're in, there's professionals organizations provide mentorship, training, networking. They're very valuable, whether you're a research scientist, an executive assistant, school teacher. There's a whole bunch of different societies and organizations that help support people's professional growth.
And you've been also on the forefront of organizing charity events where we do things for broader good. I mean, when we went food packing and other things, what is your perception? How have you perceived our team building, but at the same time contributing for the broader good?
I think that's one of the things I really like about working at HP is that there is a concerted effort to give back to the community. So like we said, we were setting up something like going working at the Second Harvest Food Bank and putting together food. I like that idea of giving back. I come from a background in the nonprofit world, and I know how much it's important for the community to help out with organizations that are trying to work for the broader good, whether it's feeding the hungry or looking for extraterrestrial life.
Yeah, very nice. And the other question I usually ask is about diversity, equity, and inclusion. You have insights from your perspective, and what are these insights?
Well, I think the role of an executive assistant is kind of naturally inclusive, mm-hmm. Because we have to work with people across a broad spectrum, and we have to be able to be aware of different cultures and different upbringings and what have you. Just because we have to work so broadly across teams. It is mostly a female-dominated organization, so we also have to be a little bit aware of what's going on for us in that role. But generally speaking, it is a role that has to be inclusive just by nature.
I've been receiving emails from you about Chevy Center here and about sports events. So I know you're very interested in sports, both football and basketball, but what do you do in your spare time other than attending these events?
Well, I'm actually a bigger baseball fan than football or basketball. So I go to a lot of the San Francisco Giants games. I also love going to concerts. I have a doubleheader this weekend of baseball game in the morning and a concert in the evening with a friend. So I do a lot. That's a lot of the things I do with my spare time. I like to travel when I can. I haven't done that in a while, partly due to the pandemic, other than traveling for a couple concerts with some friends. But that's kind of what I do a lot with my spare time is if I'm not spending time with friends and family, I'll be at a concert or at a baseball game.
And where did you grow up? And how does that era or location compare to the life of Silicon Valley today?
Well, I'm a San Francisco Bay Area kid. My parents are born and raised in San Francisco. I'm basically fifth generation San Franciscan, which is pretty rare in the area. So I've seen the San Mateo counties where I grew up. Santa Clara County, Silicon Valley has changed a lot over my lifetime. The Santa Clara Valley in particular, Silicon Valley, when I was a kid, it was still some orchards and farmland. When I started working at the SETI Institute, the first offices were across the street from what is now Google headquarters. When I started there, it was literally a cornfield. Silicon Valley was agricultural, and now it's much more obviously tech-dominated, and so that's changed a lot, and bigger and busier than when I was a kid.
And for the end of the podcast, do you have any good book recommendations? By the way, I just bought a book that Scott Schaefer recommended. It's an excellent book.
Mostly lately, I've been reading a lot of I read a lot of genre fiction, so I read a mm-hmm. lot of thrillers, and I've been reading a series of books by an author named Steve Barry. Mm-hmm. And the premise of his novels are based on a historical incident, real actual historical event, and then they add some device that is kind of the object that they're looking for to save whatever the problem is. And so they're very interesting. So you get a little bit of history involved along with some fun little action and entertainment.
Any specific title?
The one I'm reading right now is called The Malta Experience, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the gist on this one is objects that were taken by Mussolini at the end of his, before he was killed by his people at the end of World War II, and some objects that have disappeared from that. So they're searching for some things like that.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. I hope we uncovered to everybody how important your role is and how critical it is for both daily and long-term operations of labs.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.